Two polls in Israel this week show that fewer than one out of five Israelis believe the Mideast Peace Conference in the U.S. state of Maryland was a success. And more than 80% of the public think Israeli and Palestinian leaders will not be able to reach a final agreement by the end of next year. Well, I sat down for a talk with Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Oded Ben-Hur, and asked him why is there so much pessimism over the results of the Annapolis summit, and should people be more hopeful that peace can and will be achieved sooner than later?
There's another factor that one should bear in mind, and it's a figure which is constant there for a long, long time. 70% at any given time, polls taken in Israel showed that 70% of the population is for a solution in the body of two states for two peoples. Therefore, two states for two peoples means withdrawal from the territories. So you have a solid majority that has been constant of people that the moment of truth comes will support such a move. This is the reason, actually, why we came to Annapolis, because if there were only bad sentiments and suspicions and lack of credibility to what we were doing, then we wouldn't be there. Annapolis, will it or not, has been already a success, just for the simple fact that so many Arab countries have joined hands in declaring beforehand and then joining us at the conference in Washington, given a chance to a true, courageous, painful, maybe, effort on both sides to really put an end to this long tragedy called the Middle East conflict. We are confident. We're confident because I would also like to draw the attention of your listeners to the fact that not always what you hear is what you get. In other words, there are things behind the scene, things that you don't know. People are talking. People keep meeting with each other behind closed doors, in Europe, elsewhere. So we should be more trusting. We should be more confident and give it some more time. This is a newly born baby. We have to teach him or her how to walk. And we should only express support and goodwill. Otherwise, it will fail.
What does your government think about the presence of Syria at the last minute in those talks in Annapolis? And is Israel ready for peace talks with Syria?
Israel not only is ready for peace talks with Syria, but we have been for a long time. Negotiations, as you may know, took place between old governments already in the period of Hafez al-Assad, the president's father, with various prime ministers of Israel. We reached some agreements, some understandings. Too bad it never materialized until this very date. But the major ideas are there. We know what is at stake. We know basically what it should look like. We know what both sides are demanding. And all it takes now is the courage to put it in writing, to meet and be willing to dive into this pool, so to speak, and conclude these things. I believe that, as our prime minister said, that as our government reiterated time and again, that when we see this move on behalf of the Arab world and the Arab League, this is why we're so happy that the Arab League agreed as such to come to the conference, then there will be negotiations with Syria. As I said, contacts are being done all the time, and I suggest that we should just wait and see.
You used a very important word. You said courage. Both sides need to have the courage to go through with this peace. It's something that Pope Benedict himself said right before the meetings in Annapolis. He said, "We hope that the delegates will have the wisdom and the courage to truly search for peace." I mean, it's going to require sacrifice on all sides, Palestinians, Syrians, Lebanese, Israelis. What sacrifices is Israel prepared to make?
Yes, I fully agree with the appeal that the Pope made in last Angelus and last Sunday. But it is enough to see that throughout all our years of independence, 60 years, we have been living in a state of emergency, which probably, almost surely, is not the case with any of the Arab countries around us. Look what we're talking about. We are talking about the creation of a Palestinian state, a future state, right out loud, overtly, without hiding it, without trying to blur the vision. But basically, Israel is taking risks that the Arab countries don't. There is no Arab country whose existence is menaced, is threatened, which is the case with us.
You mentioned the settlements and also the return of the Palestinian refugees. How is Israel prepared to deal with those issues?
Well, sacrifices, first of, as far as the Israeli internal society is concerned, there are people, I will not lie to you, there are people in Israel who think that the area belongs to us, and that we are compromising. It's a sacrifice. The Judea-Samaria was Jewish thousands of years ago. These are places that are mentioned in the Bible. Every page that you turn in the Old Testament, you find the assurance that it was ours. So this is one sacrifice. Another is that we are shrinking our existence, our geographical existence over there, to a width along the area of the Sharon, the center of Israel, where one-third of the population of Israel is located. We are willing to withdraw now to the pre-67 lines, and I don't know how many of your listeners know that the width of that country will be 15 kilometers, 9 miles. It is less than the distance between JFK and Manhattan. We're talking about absurd figures. This is a major risk. And today, with terrorism, with the highly sophisticated methods of destruction, this is a major risk. Coming down from the Golan Heights, or this is why we're insisting on demilitarizing it rather than have the Syrians sit on the Israeli northern border, the risks are many. But the desire is there, and the necessity to overcome these fears and take risks is very much there. I believe that the overwhelming majority in Israel will prevail, and this is why I'm making an appeal to all the people that are listening to us to take a deep breath, trust the people that are negotiating on both sides, on both parties, and just wait and see.
In these polls that I mentioned before, it seems that about 70% of Israelis are against the idea of surrendering the Golan Heights, giving it back to Syria.
I don't think that you can take a poll without explaining to the people what the modalities are. The very mere philosophical idea of whether or not we should be present at the Golan Heights, yeah, that I can understand. But if they can offer us, with a world guarantee, international community guarantee, that coming down from the Golan Heights and have this area demilitarized, or giving other guarantees that we will have some sort of a beginning of a peace, I think that you will find that the 70% will not be prevalent anymore.
Do you see something like the southern Lebanon situation with UNIFIL there in the Golan Heights as a possibility then?
What, there will be a UNIFIL in the Golan Heights? Well, there used to be some kind of forces that's called the UNSO, if I remember correctly, also in the Golan Heights. The fact that we don't need it anymore, and it's not there anymore, goes to show that, first of all, by the way, the border between Syria and Israel has been quiet for quite a few years, which goes to show that things are possible. I don't know, again. The ideas are many, and people keep meeting, discussing many, many ways out. What we know is that it is high time now that we use this window of opportunity, and that all populations are ready now for sacrifices.
Lebanon was also represented in Annapolis this week, though the country was still without a president to replace President Amir Lahoud, whose mandate ended last week. The majority government of Prime Minister Fuad Siniora has for months been locked in a battle with opposition groups led by Hezbollah over who should become the nation's new president, a post constitutionally reserved for a Christian Maronite. A parliamentary vote on the presidency, scheduled for Friday, was postponed for the sixth time. But lawmakers and opposition leaders appear closer now to agreeing on a consensus candidate, Army Chief Michel Sliman. In view of a new parliamentary vote scheduled for next week, they are now examining an amendment to the country's constitution to allow Sliman to take up the post.
The Lebanese population has been tormented for so many years, and the fact that they had been under such foreign influences and internal ones, talking about the fact that Hezbollah actually is ruling the southern part of Lebanon. So I think that it's high time that we supported the Lebanese people, that the world of international community supported the Lebanon in order to arrive at a peaceful solution. Look what's happening now with the election of the president. It's an ongoing torment, and I think it's high time that they did elect a president in order to secure the continuity, to secure the same infrastructure of Lebanese, the fiber of the Lebanese social makeup remains the same. In other words, third Sunni, third Shiite, and third Christian. We've been hearing about the possibility We heard about a possibility that it will be Michel Suleiman, the head of the military, the chief of staff. And then the Christians have been willing to change, to amend the constitution for that. Remains to be seen. But as long as there are no riots in Lebanon, as long as it's done in a peaceful way, then we should give it a chance, because there's no question about it. Lebanon or Lebanese president has to be elected by the Lebanese people. So any kind of a solution imposed by the West or anybody else is bound to fail, I believe, because they will have to be the ones who decide about the future of Lebanon, the Lebanese themselves.
Israeli Ambassador to the Holy See, Oded Ben-Hur. Well, some in Lebanon have expressed concern that if the presidency were not filled soon, people might get accustomed to being without a president. I asked the director of the Montreal-based Middle East Observatory, Tony Ad, what would such a vacuum mean for the Christian community in Lebanon?
I do agree with this analysis. The very fact of not electing a new president soon would have very negative consequences. First, people would get used to the presidential vacuum, and this would affect the very essence, the very philosophy of the political system in Lebanon, which is based on power sharing between the communities, religious communities in Lebanon. So the Christians would feel that they are not anymore represented, and they are not assuming the role that they should in the political system per se. The other more negative consequence is about the eventuality of violence in the streets, demonstrations, and we've been seeing this before. I mean, it happened on the 23rd and 25th of last January, when demonstrations turned out to become violences in the streets. So this is a very dangerous, or could be a very dangerous situation.
Now, Pope John Paul lived through Lebanon's worst years, the civil war, the 1980s. There was a situation similar to what we're seeing now in Lebanon, with a vacuum in the government of the presidency. But Pope John Paul wanted to hold up Lebanon as a message. In fact, he called it a message of pluralism and of coexistence for the entire Middle East. Is that message still valid today?
Very good question. If a solution is not reached within a very reasonable framework, this message could be lost. And this is very serious, this is very dangerous, and this is what it's about, really, I mean, when it comes to the actual deadlock in Lebanon.
Is Lebanon too pluralistic? Pope John Paul called it a pluralistic society, but is Lebanon perhaps too pluralistic in the sense that all the different communities are very individualistic? They're looking, it seems to me, that they're looking more towards their individual desires and hopes for Lebanon, but not necessarily for the common good, for the national good. Am I wrong in interpreting it that way?
Not really. I mean, indeed, the Lebanese society is a very pluralistic one. But as I see things, the problem is one of the major problems is about the political system that we have in Lebanon. There is a gap between the political system and the social reality. The social reality is a very pluralistic one, as you put it. But the political system is a very centralized one. So there is a gap. And for me, until we reach some middle point between those two realities, the constitutional one, the political constitutional one, and the social cultural one, we would still have problems in Lebanon.
One of the ideas that has been tossed around is changing Lebanon's constitution to eliminate the confessional division of political power, or to change it so that it's not based on religion. The president doesn't necessarily have to be a Christian Maronite. The prime minister doesn't necessarily have to be a Sunni Muslim, and the Speaker of the House doesn't necessarily have to be a Shiite. Is that a good or a bad proposal?
I think that we should think to go the other way, not to deconfessionalize the system, but to first to admit the very pluralistic reality of the society, and then to act upon this. So, as I said before, we have to reach a political formula that recognizes this very multicultural and pluralistic aspect of the Lebanese society, not the other direction.
Mm-hmm. Where does the electoral reform laws come into play here? I know that there was quite a lot of discussion back in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. The electoral law was considered unfair by a lot of Christian and Muslim mm-hmm. groups.
This is one of the proposals of the ideas that we were debating. But electoral reform are much needed in Lebanon, but it's a very immediate measure. What I would like to focus more on is the very strategic proposal and a more long-term vision, which is about conciliating the political system and the social and cultural reality in Lebanon. But yes, indeed, the electoral system, electoral law in Lebanon must be reviewed, must be reformed. And this is a continuous debate in Lebanon.
Is a federalist solution a possibility for Lebanon?
This is a thesis that I'm considering. This is a thesis that I studied, I worked on, and I consider that some kind of federalism, I mean a Lebanese adapted federalism, could be a solution for Lebanon.
But based on a confessional division?
Based on recognizing the very pluralistic, multicultural, social and cultural reality of the Lebanese society.
One perspective offered there by the director of the Montreal-based Middle East Observatory, Tony Ade.